I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, Hollywood producer and writer Reginald Hudlin, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. Take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, fellas. What's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, hey, hey.
Good, man.
Lovely.
Good.
HUD's back for the first time. Welcome back, yo.
Good to be back.
All right, well, you know what? Ethical woes have plagued black politicians in recent weeks, and this was documented on TheRoot.com this week in a piece called The Perils of Black Power, Michelle.
You know, that it's true, and I know that some people will sort of take issue with the grouping of these stories together, but I don't know. It is kind of interesting that in the same week, New York Congressman Charles Rangel was forced to step aside from, temporarily, he says, from his chairmanship of the House Ways and Means Committee. He's being investigated for accepting inappropriate corporate junkets, corporate paid junkets to the Caribbean. And then, of course, New York Governor David Patterson announced he would not seek a full term as governor only days after he said he would, after it was reported allegations that he abused the power of his office to try to stymie an investigation into the domestic abuse that one of his aides allegedly committed. And for people who miss these stories, I have clips of both of these gentlemen talking about it. I'll just play it if you want to hear it.
Drop it.
Want to hear it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, here it is. This is going to be Charlie Rangel first, and then I believe David Patterson. Here it is.
I have sent a letter to Speaker Pelosi asking her to grant me a leave of absence until such time as the Ethics Committee completes its work.
I give you this personal oath. I have never abused my office, not now, not ever. And I believe that when the facts are reviewed, the truth will prevail.
Yikes. Thanks, Michelle.
Okay, there you go.
Man. Ruben,
yeah.
is there
yeah.
something in the water? What's going on with these black politicians?
Well, you know what's interesting for me, and I apologize for my cold as I work through here. They do get colds in Southern California, I find out. But
really?
Yeah, I tell you.
Mental note.
I think what's going on and what's interesting about this is particularly you have here two individuals here who broke barriers, who are the first African Americans to hold their respective positions. And I think that there is something to be said for the meeting that took place between – for instance, Governor Patterson, a meeting in Harlem with other African-American leaders, saying, stick it out, persevere, don't let them push you out. And that's really what's going on now. There is a tension at work here between folks who want to get Governor Patterson, for instance, out of the way, including folks, I think, at the New York Times, I've said this repeatedly, who want him out of the way to make room for Andrew Cuomo, and other African-Americans who are saying, wait a minute, he's the first black governor of the state of New York. We shouldn't be so cavalier with how we handle this matter. And I find myself siding with the black leaders and saying that, really, I mean, this is not – the man said in Governor Patterson's case, he said he's not going to run again. You know, they should take their time with this issue to see if there's something here worth investigating to the point where he might eventually just feel the need to step down altogether. If he's indicted for something, he should step down altogether. What's happening now to me is very preemptive. It's a rush to judgment about whether or not he should step down. And I think that's a real push. There's a real push to get him out of the way, and it's all about politics in New York.
Well, I just want to say one thing about that. I mean, Ruben, you've said this several times. You feel that the New York Times is on some campaign to drum Patterson out of office.
Yeah,
and I just think the predicate of that – well, the predicate of that would be that supposedly if it were somebody else that they would turn a blind eye to these very serious allegations, that there is an aide who's extremely close to the governor, and the allegation is that he called a woman who said that she had been viciously attacked by her domestic partner to press her not to – go forward with legal protection. Now, I'm sorry. Right. Are you saying that they should have ignored this if this information came to light?
Oh, no,
I guess, and
big,
I just have to challenge the argument that somehow reporters have some meeting somewhere in some diner where they decide who they're going to go after. And I just think that that's a very serious charge to make against a reputable news outlet.
I don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, here's how I think it's fair. I mean, that story is an incredibly important story. It should have been brought to light. But before the story about pressuring the woman who was a victim of domestic violence, there was the alleged leak of you know, putting it out there to the press. I'm not someone who believes, having worked in newsrooms for quite a while, I'm not someone who believes that those stories just get out by accident. You know, those are stories that are leaked out by members of the press. And there was this story beforehand on the aide itself. When I started seeing stories about Patterson's staff end up on A1 of the New York Times repeatedly before we got to the story about domestic violence, then you know something is up. And it's not complicated. Governor Patterson was not elected to that position. The liberal Democrats who run the New York Times and the liberal Democrats who propagate my industry of journalism, print journalism, never chose him. They don't want him, and they want him out of the
way. Nobody chose him. He was he took that office because he was because Elliot Spitzer had to resign. That's not the that's the process. It's the Constitution.
He's flawed. He's flawed in their minds. He's flawed, and they want him out of the way.
Well, I just think your allegation against the Times is if you can back it up, then do so. But people who leak are sources leak. Reporters report. That's the way it is. Arsalan, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I wanted to sort of look at it more holistically. As someone from Chicago, you know, my home state of Illinois has had their own little forays of ethical dilemmas and dirty politics, and so
now and then,
you know, I'm looking
as a native New Yorker. I appreciate your pointing that out.
Well, and so I'm looking at it from sort of like an Illinois versus New York perspective. And in this case, New York wins because their empire state of mind says that it's a concrete jungle where dreams are made of and there's nothing you can't do. So, you know, New York has taken the cake here. And in terms of Charlie Rangel, you know, quoting Jay-Z again, if Jeezy's paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade because, you know, he is, you know, he's used his chairmanship of Ways and Means to, you know, unjustly enrich himself. And I don't think that this is about race. I agree with you, Michelle. I think that if these were white members of Congress and the governorship, respectively, I think the New York Times or any other media outlet would have covered it accordingly.
Well, Jimmy, yeah, that's the point that The Root made, right, Jimmy? Isn't that the point that Joel Dreyfus, the editor-in-chief, was making at The Root, which is the issue is that these people have the power and scrutiny goes with the power. You agree
absolutely.
With that?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I don't think the fact that they're black helps. But, you know, politics corrupts everybody, even black people, you know. So I think a bigger question I'd like to ask is, does anybody think these people can bounce back from these allegations?
I don't know.
Question.
Marion Barry, notwithstanding, because he's kind of an outlier. You know, I mean, right. no one has that kind of magic, I don't think,
that's
except
true.
In the movies, Hood, you know.
Let me just jump in just very briefly. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, as well as Hollywood producer Reginald Hudlin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you. Does anybody want to quickly tackle that question? Whether or not the politicians can make a comeback after all this rickety-rackety. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, your Marion Barry reference is a good one because certainly that is the most extraordinary phoenix-like political career ever. And I think one of the reasons why he was able to do that was he was so successful as a mayor for so long and did so much for people that there was at least a generation of constituents who remembered him as a very effective representative. So the question is, when you look at these two careers, you go, okay, have they built up enough reservoir of goodwill to weather these really bad times?
All right. Well, speaking of drama, after much wrangling earlier this year, NBC's late night lineup, Jay Leno has returned to his old haunts as the host of The Tonight Show this week. He also returned to his usual thumping of David Letterman in the ratings.
And Jimmy, have you gotten over your kind of the loss of Conan? I don't know. He's had to be in a program to kind of deal with his grief,
man,
about this. But but listen, Jay's opened up the first week with, Oscar winner Jamie Foxx. He's had Olympians out the wazoo. Of course, the NBC connection is clearly paramount here. Our favorite NFL whipping boy, like Brett Favre, and he also had ratings magnate, former Alaska governor, former vice presidential candidate, Sarah Palin. I have to play a short clip. I just have to. Here it is.
My ears.
Yeah. Okay, cover your ears, Jimmy.
You were going to be a sportscaster at one point, right?
That was my dream, yeah.
Okay.
Was to get to report sports. Back in the day, it was a dream to work with Howard Cosell.
Okay.
And, that was what I wanted to
do.
Do
you think you'd ever give up politics to do a talk show? That seems to be the thing now. You're going to move into the talk show realm.
I hear once in a while this comes open.
Yeah, well, it does. It does come open once in a while. Yes, it does.
Oy. thanks, Michelle.
She's funny. I love her.
A-Train, you and I both were on Team Conan.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I kind of watched the whole brouhaha with Jay Leno versus Conan O'Brien. And I think this was a case of talent versus commercial sex appeal. And talent clearly lost. What do you think? Well, are you excited to see Jay back doing his thing?
Well, let me look at the notes that I have written on my hand, like Sarah Palin, and the answer would be no. You know, for me, what's actually the most exciting thing is that, you know, he moved from the 10 p.m. time slot back to his original time slot, and now at the 10 p.m. time slot is the new TV show Marriage Ref, the executive producer, Jerry Seinfeld, Tom Papa as the host. I actually like that show a lot, so I think that's going to be sort of the residual positive for NBC from Leno moving back.
Can you please move away from the haters and get to an objective person like Reggie Hudlin?
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Hud.
I never understood why the whole shuffle happened in the first place. I mean, Jay, whether you care for his style of comedy or not, was unbelievably successful. I mean, you know, ratings-wise, he was McDonald's, and everyone else was Burger King or Jack in the Box.
Rally's. So.
I just, exactly, crystals. So I just never understood why you mess with success. So, you know, and the very fact that they had to keep Jay under contract because the fear of him going to another network and crushing The Tonight Show is that big of a fear. If that is a strategic concern, then why are you doing it at all?
Take that, haters. Thank you, Reggie. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. Well, haters. I'm sorry. I'm with you on this.
I used to run a network. You know. Sometimes you have to look at the business of what you're doing. And in the business, I mean, look, I love Conan. He's a fellow Harvardite. So that's not the point. And look, certainly, you know, he's eating fine. And we'll end up on it.
Right?
And we'll end up on another network. So I fear not for all these wonderful white men making millions and millions of dollars.
Jimmy, hold on, real quick. I'm team Leno. I'm going to say that Leno is a lot funnier than Conan O'Brien, but that's not the point here. The point here is that Leno took a deal, and he took a shot, and he took a gamble to go to a different time slot. And NBC wanted him there, but he went along, and he lost at that time slot. And for him to go back, I've said all along, this was a bad look for Leno. This was bad form for Leno. So it's not a question of which is funnier. It's who's classier. On that score, Leno loses.
Snap. Please. Well, he was pushed.
Leno loses. I don't get that.
He was
that.
Number
I mean,
one in the ratings I mean, in his time guy, slot, and they wanted to move him out for Conan O'Brien, who said he would walk if he didn't.
He tried an experiment. NBC tried an experiment. He went along with it, and then ultimately didn't work out, and he wanted his old job back. It shouldn't work that way.
But No. It's not just a matter of he wanted his old job back. I mean, the fact is, look, he's been a team player. They said, look, we want you to move. He said, okay. Hey, we want you to stick around. Okay.
Right.
Wow, we need you back. Okay. So the fact is, I mean, look, I don't see how it's a bad look as long as you keep knocking the ball out the park. Dude keeps knocking the ball out the
park. Okay.
True. He didn't knock the ball out of the park at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
He did this week.
Hater, okay. Put down the Haterade, Rube. Put it down, put it down. Let's talk about the Oscars. Put
time
it down.
Out.
Thank you.
Oscar time. There are quite a few films with black actors in prominent roles, like Precious and The Blind Side. They're up for some major categories, Michelle.
They are, but I don't know. Why don't we just go right into our predictions? So, Reggie, we're excited because you're actually a voting member of the Academy.
That's
so
right.
So we can actually thank the Academy. I always wanted to say, can I just thank you anyway? I don't know what I'm thanking you for, but I always wanted to thank the Academy. So thank you, Academy, on behalf of the Barbershop. So what are your predictions?
Well, see,
you allowed to predict? Is that, can we ask?
Well, first of all, there's a difference between prediction and how I voted. I'm not going to necessarily reveal how I voted because I believe that, you know, voting is a private, sacred thing, no matter whether it's a presidential election or the Oscars. However, yes, we can guess about who's likely to win, and that's a whole other kind of conversation. I mean, but to make it clear, I'm a person who votes my conscience. I don't vote, I think so-and-so is going to win, so I'm going to vote for him. I'm like, no, this is a very small voting pool, and my vote weighs a lot. So I always vote for what I believe in.
What doesn't everybody do that? Why shouldn't they vote their conscience?
I think this is one of our problems in our country.
Okay, I feel you. Arslan, what about you?
Best motion picture, you know, even though Avatar is the front runner, I'm going to pick a dark horse and say District 9, which I thought was just a gangsterific movie. For best actor, you know, I think Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart is this year's Mickey Rourke from The Wrestler, but I'm still going to give it to my man George Clooney from Up in the Air, and director Kathryn Bigelow for Hurt Locker.
Okay. Wow. I don't know. Who, Jimmy, what else? You were co-signing.
I'm pulling
for
District 9. I can't give any love to Avatar, which for me is just four feathers for dummies. No love at all for Avatar, though it is brilliant to look at. It's just, you know, four feathers with tall Smurfs. You know, I'm all over George Clooney in Up in the Air. That was a beast of a film. The script was just awesome.
Word.
Those are my picks.
Okay. Ruben, okay. What about you?
Oh. Hey, listen, best actress, Sandra Bullock has to win this thing, okay?
Okay.
She has to win this thing. It was
a
great performance.
The Sudafed has gotten
to
him.
Movie.
I don't know what's up with this man.
Now, Jeff Bridges for best actor, I think we're in agreement. I think he will pull this out. And The Hurt Locker, I think, takes best picture.
All right. Reggie, can you tell us? What do you think?
I think those predictions are likely accurate. It's interesting because last night my wife decided to catch up on one of the few Oscar nominated films she hadn't seen. So we watched Inglourious Basterds. And she's not big on violence, so as you can imagine, she left to go to the kitchen a few times. But watching that movie again, it's a really spectacular movie.
Does anybody remember Precious? Can I just play that? The film based on the novel by Sapphire. I just have to play a short clip. I mean, here it is.
Drop it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a time Precious had everything, and I done told her that. And me and Carl, we loved Precious, and we had dreams. Precious was born around the same time Miss West's son got killed. The summertime, remember? Remember that?
I was born in November.
Yeah. That's right.
Ooh. Reggie, tell me that Monique does not get Best Supporting Actress for that. Come on.
Monique is a lock for Best Supporting, the same way Christopher Waltz is a lock for Best Supporting in Inglourious Basterds. You know, I think the young lady who played Precious, it's really too bad that she's not getting more serious consideration for Best Actress, because when you listen to her normal speech pattern, you realize that she really did transform to play that lead role of Precious.
She was. And endorsed by no less than Barbara Bush, our former first lady. She's telling everybody to go see it. So there you go. So anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll call you back and find out who was right and who was not. Reginald Hudlin is a Hollywood producer, writer, and director. He joined us from our studios at NPR West in Culver City, California. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He was with us from WCPN in Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com. He was here with us in our D.C. studios. And Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. And he joined us from San Diego. Here's to all those Oscar parties, everybody. Thank
Peace.
You all so much.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More's technical director is Kimberly Jones. She had a hand this week from Vince Muse. Special thanks this week to guest host Lynn Neary. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.